Have you been searching for the best ticket deals around? Well, look no further. With TixFlix, the price you see is the price you pay. And TixFlix just happens to have over $6 billion in ticket inventory just waiting for you. They absolutely mean it when they say every ticket, every venue, everywhere. And you can save even more with promo code PULSE in all caps to save you 5% off your total purchase. Just go to TixFlix.com and click the search bar. Search events based on your geographic location. Pick the show you want, and bam, it's showtime. Sporting events, Broadway shows, concerts, and more with TixFlix.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for the email newsletter so you can stay up to date on the latest news and savings with TixFlix. That's TixFlix.com, TixFlix.com. Every ticket, every venue, everywhere.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Nets Pulse Podcast, part of the Pulse Podcast Network. I, as always, your co-host, Brett the Man Bun Garofalo, here with Carl the Talent Jackson. Our goal today is to avoid smoking, piping hot takes that seem to be all over the Twitterverse at this point. But before we get into any of that, as always, I'd like to kick off the show by just asking, Carl, how are you, man?
Brett, are we firing everybody or are we keeping the ball boys? Let me know. Lay it on me.
I mean, I feel like when you fire this many people, you have to make wholesale organizational changes. And that starts with the ball boys.
Promoting the ball boys. All right. Very good. Very good.
Move them up the chain.
Exactly. Move them up the ranks. Promote the mail room.
We need young blood that's hungry.
Hungry for other blood, apparently.
Blood that's hungry for other blood. Your 2018-19 Nets.
A lot of hemoglobin bone gall.
The hemoglobetrotters.
Yeah, exactly. We're more like the Hemo Washington Generals right now, if you know what I mean.
Oh, it's been a rough stretch for Nets fans, and while there isn't much we can do to stay sane in these dark times, I mean, I found myself today sitting home on a Sunday celebrating an Orlando Magic loss, and then losing my mind as the Pistons somehow pulled out a win over the Toronto Raptors in overtime, and wondering why the heck did the Raptors sit Kawhi in this game.
And Brett, number seven for the first time since, maybe December, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Should we revise our 39 win predictions?
Can we predict lower than 32 wins? Is that possible?
Is it possible? The Nets are going to win 25. Somehow seven wins are going to get taken away. It's going to be like, you know, when the Fab Five had to vacate their run to the Final Four.
Can they take away wins for bad behavior?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. It's going to be like, you know, yeah, just like an NCAA vacated championship.
Incomplete grade on the season.
Absolutely.
Well, what do you think? Do you want to take them through our agenda for today?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. So, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about, I think, you know, some of the general sentiment that we've been hearing around the Twitterverse, the hot takes, the, you know, fire everybody, the adjustments, all that good stuff. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about a team that this Nets team parallels from the last few years and why that scares us a little bit.
I am not looking forward to that segment. That one popped into my head on a run I was on the other night, and it's been cycling through my brain ever since, and I needed to get it out. So this podcast is going to be more personal therapy for me, and hopefully not anxiety inducing for the listeners that latch on to that and potentially think that it's not too far from the truth. But I think a good place to start when we're overviewing these hot takes is what is causing them, and diving into the numbers for the Nets, not only over the last two games where, okay, yeah, Nets fans are going to be angry.
Three games, frankly.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we're used to losing, but we've been competitive in losses. And in these past few games, that has not been the case, which has been pretty rough. I mean, even I was watching these games like, okay, cool, we're down 10, we're down 15. We're going to make a run at some point. We're going to get this thing to 7, 8, maybe even 5 or 6, and we'll have a shot to win it. And then maybe we'll hit a big 3 or 2. Or if Spencer isn't fully back yet, he's the guy that usually does that. Maybe we won't, but at least we'll make it close.
Yeah, it's been rough. I mean, I feel like, you know, like you said, I think everything kind of feels like it's floating further and further away from them, but still in striking distance. Okay, just need a little bit of a run, but the runs just aren't happening really on either side of the ball right now. No big stops, no big offensive runs, and you know, just getting completely eaten alive on the offensive or on the defensive glass rather. Extending possessions, not getting 50-50 balls, kind of everything that this team has been so good at doing during their best days, just completely falling apart right now.
And let me read you some of these numbers, because the last three games have been, I think, the problems that have been part of this team for well over a month coming to a head. So let's just look back through February 1st. So since February 1st, the Nets have a negative 6.6 point differential, which is 25th. In the league. The only teams that we're ahead of from February 1st on are the Cavs, the Spurs, the Mavs, the Suns, and the Lakers, which makes me very happy inside. So we've got a 4-8 record over that span. That includes a 2-5 record at home, which is really, really rough for us. Now, everybody seems to be blaming our defense and the fact that teams are blowing us out, albeit recently during this run, as the reason that we're not playing that well. And if we can just fix the defense, yeah, that'll be the thing that gets us back on track. But if you're looking at these numbers, we've had a 105.1 offensive rating since February 1st. That ranks dead last in the entire NBA over that span.
Is that bad?
I think that's bad.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
Although they say nice guys finish last, and I want to be nice, so.
True, we're very nice.
It's not always bad.
Yikes.
Yeah. Now, the defensive rating, which has been the thing that everybody has been harping on, it's 111.7, which over that span is 19th. And if you look at the Nets overall over the course of the season, we're 18th in defensive rating. So not much has changed there. The defense is the same. It really is the offense that's taken a nosedive, and it's tough to see pulling out of that without simply hitting shots. I'm trying to think of the one saving grace in terms of our losses during this, because our point differential in losses, and even before those last three games, it was pretty rough, is negative 14.5. I think the one competitive loss that we had in there was that Raptors game, and that was it.
Yeah. And that was arguably the game that they looked the Nuggets game was the game that they looked the best in. The Raptors game, though, was maybe a close second. They looked really good. They looked sort of bad in wins against the Cavs, sort of nothing to write home about in the win against the Spurs. So it's just been kind of a full-scale cratering here for the last, you know, few games. So, Brett, like, how much, like, based on what you've seen, how much do you feel this is just sort of wholesale regression to the mean, just sort of bad luck, bounces, things evening out? And how much of it is other teams kind of making adjustments to what they've seen from the Nets previously?
I don't want to sound, you know, I don't want to sound like it's not other teams affecting us, but I really do think that teams go through hot and cold stretches throughout the season. That phrase, it's a make or miss league. If you get open shots, you have to knock them down. And if you do, you're going to have a chance to win every night. And if you don't, you're not going to. I sound like I'm just throwing platitudes out there, like I'm a player sitting on a podium after a game. But that's really what it comes down to. And the fact is, the Nets have just been missing shots. We're shooting 32% from three. That's way down as to where we've been shooting for the season. And it shows. It shows in our offensive rating. And I think if we get to a point where we're knocking down shots like the Detroit Pistons or the Orlando Magic are right now, they're both shooting over 40% since the All-Star break, then we would be winning games like they are too. And they're going to cool off. Eventually, you can't shoot 40% from three forever. You can do it over a quick span. And I think we're going to regress back to the mean because we do have decent shooters on this team. So I'm trying not to hit the panic button yet. I do think this is just a normal blip on the radar during the season. It just couldn't be coming at a worse time given the upcoming schedule and given the importance in the standings and the tiebreakers of some of these games that we're going through.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I think one of the frustrating things I think about following the league, or one of the interesting things that I've sort of noticed, is like there's kind of the local narrative that you have watching a team, following them day to day, sort of the way the beat writers are plugged into things. And then there's kind of the national narrative, and like the national narrative always trails like 3 or 4 weeks. And so when something like this happens where, you know, in fairness, like the Nets, I think, have been coasting and sort of surfing a wave of like really positive national buzz sort of through the All-Star game, where, you know, everybody kind of just decided that they're going to make the playoffs. And like now that it's started to downturn, I mean, like you and I have been talking about how difficult this schedule is going to be down the stretch for a few weeks now. I mean, I think it's been a known thing. I think it's been a known like concern, but like now all of a sudden too, it's like you start hearing the chirping from like the national writers are like, well, maybe the Nets aren't going to make the playoffs. Like, maybe this isn't going to go well. And it's just really frustrating to sort of see all of that coming with the tide turning the way that it is. It's pretty difficult. And I think it's easy to just sort of lash out at anything and everything that you can worry about.
And I get it. I mean, we're relevant for the first time in a long time, and we were ahead of schedule, and with that comes certain expectations. Maybe a lot of fans weren't privy to the upcoming schedule or thought the Nets were in a better spot than we were and had the playoffs in their mind as a lock and had signing some free agents this summer as a lock. But neither of those things are locks, and it doesn't mean that the season was a failure, and it doesn't mean that the Nets are going in a negative direction or Sean Marks' plan has somehow failed.
Yeah, so I think that's actually a really interesting thing that I want to spend a second on. So I think one thing that I have found kind of just interesting about the way that people frame this season for Brooklyn is like, you know, and I think it's an oversimplification, but I think that there's some truth in there as well, is basically it's like either, I mean, I think coming into this year, nobody's expecting the Nets to contend for a championship. I don't think at any point, even when they were really good, I think everybody's ceiling was sort of like, oh, maybe we'll get to the second round. But what I notice is like, the range of outcomes gets flattened to just sort of two things. It's like either you're tanking to get better through the draft or you're playing well to attract a free agent. And what I'm wondering is, you know, how do you feel? Like, I think a lot of fans really feel it's very directly correlated. Like, if we don't make the playoffs, we're not signing Kawhi Leonard. We're not signing Kevin Durant. I think that those two outcomes may indeed both happen, but I don't necessarily know that, like, how great of an impact that has on it. Like, what do you feel? Do you feel like whether or not they're going to sign a tier one kind of max free agent this summer is entirely dependent on whether or not they make the playoffs? Do you think it's possible for them to sign one if they don't?
You know, being a player and being a normal human being couldn't be more different. So I think it's really tough for me to put myself in the mindset of a player. I mean, imagine having hundreds of thousands of Twitter followers and everybody wanting a piece of your time and growing up anointed as, you know, the next best thing. It's just tough to put myself in that mindset. But it's hard for me to grasp that the difference between being the eighth seed and making the playoffs and maybe stealing one or two games from the Bucks is going to be a reason that a free agent decides to come to Brooklyn after all the positive press the Nets have had this year. I mean, there's so many things that you can look at to use as an excuse for why the Nets don't make the playoffs and put together a logical reason behind that, that I don't necessarily think it's going to be that big of a deal. I mean, look at all the injuries that we had to some of our best players, Dinwiddie, LeVert, the schedule that we had coming down the stretch, the fact that we exceeded expectations. We had an all-star for the first time who was a castaway from a very, very prominent team. I really don't think it's going to sway free agents' decisions that much. I think that a lot of the free agents have probably made up their mind about where they're going to go, but they would never say that to their teams. They'd probably only say it to their inner circles. And I don't think the playoffs are going to swing that one way or the other.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I think that on the one hand, you know, the sort of like mojo around the team, the buzz, the sort of story, like I do think it matters to a certain extent. But I guess the way that I would think about it is if that's what you were counting on to be able to sign a free agent, then you shouldn't have put all your eggs in that basket in the first place, because there's so much else swirling around that just makes it really, really difficult. And, you know, I feel like what we've heard about the Nets is a lot more in terms of banking on the culture, the facilities, the word of mouth that they've gotten from players like, you know, like an Ed Davis or a Jerry Dudley, guys who are, you know, well-known, well-respected around the league that are coming here, playing here, saying good things about it. You know, that to me, I think is something I put a little bit more stock in. But I've also never been one to think that, you know, this year was about whether or not the Nets signed somebody in the offseason either.
I agree. And that's, I think that fans have a skewed perspective or a perception of what cap space means. Because when a team has cap space, the first thought is, okay, great. You create cap space to try to sign a superstar or a max free agent. And yeah, that's the best case scenario with cap space, but cap space is good for a variety of reasons. You want that flexibility moving forward, and not having financial freedom, whether you're a great team or a poor team, really, really hinders the types of things that you can do to improve your team. So it's great that we have draft picks and cap space going into next year, regardless of what we end up doing with that cap space, which a lot of that is going to be outside of the Nets' control.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, I think the other thing that gives me a little bit of optimism about this team, and we touched on it a little bit in our pod last week when we talked about the four spot, is I think even if you're not coming in and signing a Kevin Durant or a Kawhi Leonard or, you know, a Klay Thompson or some of these guys that are big name free agents this year, like there are areas on this team and in this rotation that can be so greatly improved upon with a relatively short-term deal with guys that are on the market this summer. And so, like, I wouldn't look at, like, if the Nets were to sign Nikola Mirotic, or they were to sign Rudy Gay, or, you know, guys that could really bolster that power forward position while not tying up, tying the team up financially too far down the line. Like, I wouldn't look at it as, oh, well, the Nets wanted Kawhi Leonard this summer, but they wound up with Rudy Gay. Like I would look at it more as like, okay, you know, kind of like what was talked about with when Dinwiddie signed, which is like the Nets looking kind of forward to what they're doing. They're trying to develop the players. They've shown maximizing the value of the assets that they have, whether that's D'Angelo Russell or what Caris LeVert looked like before he got hurt, or Spencer Dinwiddie or Joe Harris. And, you know, really, you know, putting those guys in a position to succeed by bringing in other players that can raise the floor around them.
If you can skip steps, awesome. That's great. If you can find a way to trade for or sign a superstar in the off season, during the first year that we have draft picks and cap space, after putting together a team that competes with castaways and second draft picks, or second draft players that teams didn't want anymore, awesome. Do it. And we've put ourselves in a position to potentially make that. But I think the percentage chance that we do that is very low. And because we now have that chance, it's created this skewed expectation with fans where you do the best with the hand that you're dealt by the league. And I think the market this summer for players like Anthony Davis that are going to be available via trade is going to be a little bit too rich for what the Nets are looking to pay, because you're going to have to mortgage the future to get a player like that. And I don't think the Nets infrastructure and young players and system is good enough right now that one superstar is going to make them a true contender. So therefore, there's going to have to be a lot of collusion that goes on behind the scenes to say, hey, if I'm going to Brooklyn, you're coming with me because I want to play for a contender too. So I just think there's so much at play there to get to a point where the Nets are going to skip steps and move from rebuilding feel-good story to actual contender that it's probably not going to happen, or the likelihood of it happening is so, so low. But it seems that that's become the expectation from a lot of folks based on the fact that we have cap space, have been playing well, and there's been a lot of buzz around Brooklyn this season.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, when you really take a step back, right, I mean, this team, I think the over-under on wins was like, around 30 or 35, right? So they're on pace, at least, although I think, as you and I said earlier, we wouldn't be surprised if they did not win from here until the end of the season. They're on pace to outplay, you know, I think what people came in thinking was their true talent level. And they've gotten there by watching guys who are important to the future of this franchise make giant leaps. I mean, D'Angelo Russell has made a big leap. I think Spencer Dinwiddie has taken great steps forward. Caris LeVert looked every bit like an all-star before he got injured, and he's had some trouble coming back from injury, but definitely, you know, had that, you know, big leaps and bounds initially. Rodion Skoroux has come out of nowhere to look like a real rotation fitter or somebody that could potentially be better as a young guy. Jared Allen has made strides. So I don't really think you can realistically, if you take yourself back to the beginning of the season, look at what the Nets have accomplished and look at the way guys have played and be sort of disappointed by it, because really almost everything has gone right, but it's still so frustrating to kind of watch the bottom drop out at this juncture of the season and feel like, you know, you're really close to being back to square one, because ultimately what this team is aside from Russell, you got a collection of players and possibly LeVert and maybe Allen, who I think could be a real contributor on a team, you know, in a specific role. You have a lot of players that really top out at very, very good, but not necessarily great. And figuring out how to navigate and get over that hump, I think, is a big challenge that they have coming up.
Not only have a lot of things gone right, but the Nets are overperforming as well. And if you look at our ability to play through all of the injuries, but we've corrected our performance in close games for the most part after another brutal start to the season, which it looked like this is going to be another character building season for the Nets, where they get those almost wins. But the Nets
by the way, like, totally cutting you off.
All good.
I apologize. Dick move. When we finish, you know, should we finish a game or two? And I also don't want to make it seem like we're like shoveling dirt on the Nets grave here. I think there's plenty of time to turn it around. There's
agreed.
Plenty of season
left. Totally
to play,
agree.
And they absolutely have a chance, have a strong chance to, you know, continue to be in the playoffs. I don't mean to make it sound like that, but like, oh boy, looking back, like that Oklahoma City game that we lost in the Paul George buzzer beater, that Memphis game in Barclays where the Nets were up
so rough.
Like seven and Jaren Jackson hit the 4-point play. Like, there are three or four of those that would have made all the difference in the world.
Oh, but, man. That anyway. Pelicans game where D'Lo threw the ball away at the end and Drew Holiday hit that game. That was so rough to watch.
And, oh, by the way, all these teams that we're mentioning, you know, I guess the Thunder notwithstanding, because we are playing them and they've gotten a lot better, but like, wouldn't it be great to be playing the Pelicans now instead of them? Wouldn't it be great to be playing to have the Grizzlies on this upcoming road trip instead of the people that we do have?
Oh, man. And despite all of that, the Nets have the 10th best point differential in the Eastern Conference right now, yet they sit in seventh.
Yeah, that.
But hey, fire Kenny.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, unless you're talking about Kenny, the ball boy, we're firing everybody. That's what we said earlier.
Right. Yeah, it just feels like Twitter to me is playing fuck, marry, kill with people on the Nets. It's like, okay, well, I want to marry Rhodey, I want to kill Kenny, and I want to fuck Trebion. But what I mean by that is I want to kill him too. And it's just,
yeah, it's there's it's frustrating. I mean, like, listen, I get it, right? It's frustrating. It's frustrating to see this team, you know, because it's not as difficult as those losses were earlier in the season to watch them build a lead and watch, you know, some things go wrong down the stretch. Somehow a lot more comforting than just watch them come out and just absolutely lay an egg, like, three games in a row, all winnable games. Granted, there is a back-to-back, but they had a chance to kind of really put the Hornets away, come out flat. They had a chance to come back against the Heat, who were missing guys, missing some of their best players, completely flat. They had a chance to – the Wizards left for dead still, you know, came out and laid down against them. So I get the frustration, but, like, I think if you – like, as to your point, like, if you look at what everybody's kind of advocating for, it's really just – it's really just projecting the frustration.
Exactly. And it's trying to present a solution, because if you just project frustration without presenting a solution, you're not really solving the problem. But I was looking into some of the numbers. I mean, Rhodey is negative, has a negative 10.1 differential from Feb 1st and on. Trevion Graham is a negative 10.9. So I don't really think that 0.8 differential is really going to make a difference playing Rhodey now. The only thing you're potentially getting out of that is development of Rhodey, but remember that he played about 4.5 minutes a game over a 9-game span in Barcelona last year, and he didn't even make it for summer league. So the guy is probably the least equipped out of any rookie in the past 10 years to make it through an NBA season unscathed, outside of maybe Eddie Deep Dish Curry.
Ooh, yeah, that's maybe an Oliver Miller in there. Cleveland era Sean Kemp, perhaps. But
good God.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, I think there's just not a lot of answers, and they've been able to get more out of guys. The whole has been greater than the sum of the parts so far. But the challenge is, like, sometimes that math just stops working. But anyway, sorry, we're wallowing, I think, a little bit. I think you had an interesting comparison that you wanted to make with the Nets to a recent team. Let's talk about that.
I did. And before we get into that, I just want to rehash my New England stubbornness. I'm holding firm at 39 wins for the Nets. I think that we're going to find a way to get there, even given our recent woes and the incredible schedule that we have coming down the stretch. But I think that we're going to get 39 wins, and I think we're going to be the seventh seed.
Well, you and I were joking around that they're going to play themselves out of the playoffs during the easy stretch of the schedule, play themselves back in during the insanely hard road trip somehow against all odds, and then come out and boof it against the Heat. I don't get it. and somehow, you know, end up in the worst lottery slot. That was my pessimistic read. I'm going to lower my projection from 39 to 37, which I still think could get us in, depending on what other folks do down the stretch.
I think it could get us in too. I'm just really not looking forward to watching Gabrielle Union celebrate on the sidelines as the Nets playoff hopes slip away as Dwayne Wade banks in threes.
Hashtag one last dance.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, let's switch on to this next segment. We'll see which one of us is right. Hopefully we split the difference at 38 wins, which is the 538 projection, and the Nets somehow make the playoffs. But Nets fans, I was thinking about this, and I'm just going to apologize before I get into it, because it's not the my question is, are the 2018-2019 Brooklyn Nets just the 2016-2017 Miami Heat in disguise? Now, I'm going to walk through a storied history of the 2016-2017 Heat for those of you who don't remember them, and draw some parallels between the Nets this year. So hear me out. If you don't remember, this was the second season after LeBron decided to go back to Cleveland, the whole I'm coming home hullabaloo. Pat Riley was on tilt. They had signed or traded for a bunch of role players, and the team wasn't gelling. They started 11-30. And this was around mid-January. Playoffs weren't in sight, looking like they were going to have to use their draft pick and hope that they found a superstar with that. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, they ended up going on a 13-game winning streak and ended the season on a 30-11 run, missing the playoffs by one game. It was nuts. And those things alone, because they were a bunch of role players and an aging star, got me thinking about this season with the Nets, where we had some injuries from the beginning of the season, dropping a lot of close games, going on the 8-game losing streak. It looked like there was no hope, and a lot of people were talking about, okay, let's sell the veterans that we found, pick up some assets for them, tank, and see if we can find a way to pick up some talent in the draft and start the rebuild as planned with our own draft picks in the summer of 2019. Then all of a sudden, the Nets rattle off the 7-game winning streak, go on an epic, I think it was 24-5 run over a month and a half span, play themselves into playoff contention, become the darlings of the national media, tons of press around D'Angelo Russell becoming an all-star for the first time, Joe Harris winning the three-point competition, Caris LeVert, the whole nation mourned as he got injured. There were so many good things happening during that stretch. And now we're careening towards the end of the season, and the playoffs are not a lock for this team, but it's looking like we're either going to just sneak in by the hair of our chinny chin chins, or we're going to miss it by a few games towards the end of the season. And that really reminded me of the 2016-2017 Heat. Now, there's a lot of points that I'm going to make here after that, but Carl, your thoughts on that first initial rundown?
So My first thought is I'm really thinking about the disguises more than anything else, because like the idea of, well, I was hoping that Kelly Olynyk was on that team, but he's not. But I will just say Josh McRoberts potentially like disguising himself as Jared Allen is pretty awesome to me. So that was my first thought there. My second thought is. This is dark stuff, Brett, because I think my fear with this team all along this season in a more sort of existential way is like that, you know, I believe in what they're doing. I believe in the program, so to speak, that Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson have put together. I've seen the results. We've seen the results of the player development approach that they're taking, the ability to, you know, get value out of guys to find hits on the margin, to you know, get the team playing team basketball. I've seen all of that. I think the danger of it has always been, do you sort of pull your way into, you know, the 9-6 area of the East and wind up on the treadmill of mediocrity on a team with a lot of very good, you know, basically like, you know, there's sort of two ways you can go with a team of sort of very good role player type teams, where, you know, you could become the Pacers, where, you know, I think at least a puncher's chance in the East right now. I mean, maybe not right now with Oladipo out, but I don't think that Victor, I mean, no disrespect to Victor Oladipo, but I don't think that he's like a super duper star, right? Like, I think he's great and he's a star, but it's, you know, that it's a little bit different than like Giannis. Or do you become like the Heat, where you have a bunch of players that are pretty good, you can hang with anybody on any given night, but you don't really make enough noise, you don't get bad enough to really come back, and they're just kind of this collection of guys that seem interesting, are pretty good, are playing better maybe than you would expect from them, but are kind of locked into this sort of, you know, never getting better than their immediate station.
Which is the fear if we max out D'Angelo Russell and sign a few role players to plug our quote-unquote holes. Now, there is precedent to do this the right way, rebuild while remaining competitive and bide your time on the trade market until somebody slips up. Look at the Rockets with the James Harden trade. That's one. Look at the Celtics fleecing the Nets. But those are fewer and far between. I would say the Thunder are a good example of that as well, finding a way to replace some of the star talent and star caliber play that Kevin Durant had with Paul George, who's looked insane this season and is in the MVP race. But those examples, I'd say, are the exception rather than the norm. And there are so many more teams like the Nets that have wallowed in mediocrity. Now, there are a few differences, but some of the more scary parallels there too are Miami has always been known for an incredible culture since Pat Riley took over. Players love going there. They have guys like Udonis Haslem that have stuck around for 37 years just because they like being part of the organization, mentoring young guys, even though they can't play anymore. It's a great market. It's a place that people want to be, and they do things like provide great facilities. They take care of the players. Families, they have a history of winning, and they have a front office with a proven track record. So they even have a few things that are ahead of the Nets in that respect. And the front office, and I'm hoping this is what I'm hoping is the difference. I'm hoping this is just Pat Riley being on tilt, being angry, being emotional, being a scorned ex-wife of LeBron James, making decisions from an emotional base rather than a logical one. Overpaid for glorified role players like James Johnson and Dion Waiters and Tyler Johnson, courtesy of Sean Marks. And now they have Johnson, Waiters, and Olynyk, who they also signed, not that season, but the next, when the Celtics had to make room for Horford. Those three players are making $40 million next season. And they are a fringe playoff team, and that's really, really rough. And I think that in my mind, that's worst case scenario for the Nets. Management overreacting and overinflating where this team stands and making moves to add non-superstar players for a little bit more than they're worth to help bolster this roster and put us on that treadmill of mediocrity, like you were just saying. Now, the bright spots are they did sign Richardson and Winslow to very, very team-friendly deals. When those players were, they certainly had a lot of talent and promise, but they hadn't really shown flashes yet. And all of a sudden, those are two of the best young players in the league now. So they did make some good decisions, but I think the things that the Nets can't do is overpay for these middling players that would really help out contenders, but they're not going to get your team from a 10-6 seed to a top three seed in the conference.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's a frightening parallel. I think going back to what you were saying though about teams that you felt like had done it well, I think, it's interesting because I think like the Rockets are a tough one for me just because the Harden trade ended up being such a jackpot. And I think in fair, I mean, I always hated that deal for Oklahoma City. I mean, obviously as a sort of self-styled aficionado, like hate Thunder in Oklahoma City and, find it that leave a money to a worse market and then immediately like, trade a there because they don't want to pay the luxury tax. Like that is offensive, frankly. But even with all that said, I don't think that anybody felt like James Harden was going to become what he did in Houston. I don't think Daryl Morey. I mean, Daryl Morey has said that he didn't think that. So that one's a little bit different to me. The teams that interest me from a Nets perspective, from an optimistic perspective, are like I said earlier, the Indiana is one, and I think the other one is Denver, because I think that Denver is. I think Nikola Jokic is an absolute superstar, and they were able to get him in the second round of the draft, and so that's. There is a little bit of that idea of kind of, hitting the scratch off ticket just right there. But everybody else on that team, I feel like they've been able to. I mean, they overpaid for Millsap, so that wasn't necessarily a great move. But they've really been able to kind of build that team around them without necessarily pulling in high lotto pick guys that you thought were going to make a huge difference. I mean, I think Murray was a lottery pick. They have a couple of guys that were, but it's a little bit different than other teams where they're just drafting the superstar.
You're right. And I think that's what I'd like to think about the Sean Marks era, that they're going to rebuild by simply being a little bit better than everybody else at evaluating talent. And regardless of where their draft picks are, they're going to hit and get a player that can contribute regardless of where the spot in the draft is. And they're also going to be able to pick up players in free agency that are good fits.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And I think the other thing to keep in mind too, is it's evaluating, but it's also developing. And that's something that they've shown to be good at. So I think there's reason for optimism, Brett. We can still build on this.
We can build on this.
And hey, go ahead, please build on my comment.
I love your idea of doing a podcast going through how the Nets have developed players and how that compares to other organizations at some point. So stay tuned for something like that in the future, because that's going to be really, really fun.
For sure. We'll fire up some spreadsheets and do some cross comparisons. But in speaking of building and riding the ship and getting back on track, Dallas on Monday, Cleveland on Wednesday. Brett, how the Nets going to look this week? And revise your prediction of where they finish if needed.
Is Cleveland going to continue doing us favors like they did today with that win versus the Magic? So as I said, I'm sticking with my win prediction of 39, which I think is very bullish at this point, given the Nets' recent losses and recent point differential. Because of the Magic's lack of point guard play and the fact that even though they have an awesome defense, I really do feel like the three-point shooting has been the biggest differentiator for them. I think that they're going to fall off as the season progresses, regardless of how difficult their schedule is. I think that the Nets blew their chance at being the team that's going to be able to grab the sixth seed with some of these winnable games. And even if we go 3-for-3 on these games, it's still going to be very, very tough to get more than 6 wins out of that remaining schedule. So if I had to predict end of season, and I promise I'm not avoiding this with this long-winded explanation, I still think I'm going to put the Nets in the 7th spot. But I originally had the Hornets in the 6th spot. I think the Hornets are now going to grab the 8th spot. I know that they haven't been playing well, but I think that they have the most continuity out of all of these teams. I think that they have the best player outside of Blake Griffin out of all of these teams in Kemba Walker. And I think they're going to find a way to get it done down the stretch, given that experience. And then as far as the 6th seed goes, the Pistons look really good. I think you were right, and I think they're going to find a way to crawl their way up there. They had a very, very impressive win against the Toronto Raptors today, albeit the Raptors weren't playing Kawhi, like I mentioned earlier. So if I had to guess, I would say Pistons, Nets, Hornets, with the Magic dropping out.
Yeah, I mean, Detroit's in the 6th seed right now. I had originally held out hopes that we could steal the season series from them with our March 11th game, but just the way, you know, we've been playing, I envision Andre Drummond just playing absolute volleyball with the offensive glass that one. So we will probably not do that, but I think that the Nets can go. I'd like to say they can go 3-0 with 3 winnable games coming up this week against Dallas, Cleveland, and Atlanta. But the way that Trae Young's been playing, I think 2-1 is maybe a little bit more realistic. I'm going to revise my prediction to 37 wins. I do still think that they can kind of hold on to and back into the 8th seed and make some noise in the playoffs. I think the shots are going to start falling, Brett. They have to start falling. The baskets are still regulation size. The ball is still smaller than the hoop. The shots are going to go in. They have to go in, right?
You can always come to you for the cold, hard facts.
I'm just like Gene Hackman measuring the court of Hoosiers for myself.
Oh, man. I can't wait to see what Nets Twitter looks like if we rattle off these next 3 games and end up winning them and looking like the Nets again.
I will say for Nets Twitter, the bounce back time is pretty phenomenal. So, you know, one game and everybody's spirits are good. We've got the coach of the year. We've got an executive of the year candidate. You know, we've got a budding power forward, and then you lose one game and we're just keeping the ball, boys.
Well, my favorite thing about Nets Twitter is the fact that there is a Nets Twitter. People care about the Nets, and that means a lot to me, especially when they were the little.
No, that's very true. That's very true and very cool.
Oh. All right.
All right. As always, if you like what you hear, hit us up. Let us know. If you don't like what you hear, if you got a suggestion, you have a question, hit us up on Gmail, netspulse@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter, @nets_pulse, or @nets_pulse on Twitter. I think we're on some sort of like a Twitch or a other kind of channel that makes me feel like a grandpa, so don't hit us up there. But email, Twitter, listen, rate us 5 stars would be great. We're on Apple now, very futuristic. Living in the future.
We're not on Twitch, but if you do hit us up on Twitch, we will have Carl try to learn how to play Fortnite for the first time against 13-year-olds and live stream it.
I am so good at first-person shooting games. I'm amazing.
Although I will say, you are a great Mario Kart player, so there's that.
I did. I peaked at Mario Kart. It's the only one. It's the only
one. You know there are people that will not play Super Smash Brothers because Waluigi's not in the game?
That's
I didn't know
that. dude, I'm Jigglypuff all the way, 100%. All right, we should let people go, including me.
Come on. All right, have
good night. Good night, man. Bye.